Principle Powered Radio. If you made a pledge but have not yet paid, please do so by May 1st to be eligible for our prize draw.
We pledge resistance.
What's up? This is Saul Williams chilling here in Montreal, here on CKUT. Peace.
We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing. On. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? I'm brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are 7 days into the month of April. We're broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You're tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CKUT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. On today's show, we have an episode of Disability After Dark, featuring an interview with Lucy Dawson. All that, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. You're listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you'd like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at ckut.ca. You can also follow us on Twitter at @avalancheckut.
Level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends in private homes and yards are prohibited. Travel between regions should be avoided. It is forbidden to leave your home between 9:30 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about other measures in place to fight COVID-19. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Montreal singer-songwriter Adelaya is on the rise. Listen to her critically acclaimed debut album, What We Say in Private, and follow-up EP, Woman Here, now available on all platforms. Follow her to be the first to hear when new music drops. Learn more at adalea.music.com. Funded by Factor.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKUT 90.3 FM. Up this hour is an episode of Disability After Dark with Andrew Gerza, featuring an interview with Lucy Dawson. This interview contains sexually explicit material.
You may be wondering, Andrew, weren't you calling yourself Drew for like the last year? Why did you decide to make that change? And you know, sometimes names just don't work out, and we all have the right and the chance to experiment with things, and so I decided that Andrew felt more authentic and more who I was. And I was felt like when I was using Drew, I was trying to, like, become this character that I am not entirely. And I wanted to be really authentic with you, the audience. So I've let go of Drew, and now I'll be referred to as my actual name, Andrew. So it's back to Andrew. That's why I said I'm the amazing Andrew. The amazing Andrew Gerza, or the awesomely sexy Andrew Gerza. I don't know. We'll figure out something. But it's back to Andrew now. And also, just so we're aware, my pronouns are now they and he. And I'll do a whole episode on why I changed the order of my pronouns at a later time. But on the show today, I sit down with my new friend, Lucy Dawson, who is a bona fide disabled internet star. They have 51,000 followers on Instagram. They have way more followers on TikTok, and I can't remember the exact number, but they're right up there. They are a disabled model out of the UK, and I've been wanting to have them on the show for a long while. They've actually wanted to be on the show for a while. They reached out a bunch of times, and disability got in the way, and timing got in the way, and then I forgot because disability brain and all that stuff. So finally, I'm sitting down with my friend Lucy Dawson, and she tells us about her experience having encephalitis and what that was like for her, and all of the trials and tribulations that she went through going to be diagnosed with disability, and how she both has visible and invisible disabilities because of that. That is, it's a pretty involved story. She has a lot to say, and it was really important for her to share that part with us. Then we talk a little bit about her experience modeling and disability, and how, what that's been like for her, and her experiences working for one of the only agencies in the UK, I think, that works strictly with disabled models. And she talks about that. And then we talk a little bit about her experiences dating and her experiences with people fetishizing her. And there's a whole lot of disability stuff that we talk about. But I loved being able to share her story. And I love bringing on people who, while we may talk about similar themes every week, they always have a different story around disability to shine a bright light on. So without further ado, here's my interview with Lucy Dawson, right now on Disability After Dark. Lucy Dawson, hello.
Hi, so glad to be here.
Hi, such a pleasure to finally meet you. You and I have been, like, wanting to do this literally for a couple years now.
Yeah, we've been, like, Instagram friends.
We've been, like, social media, like, buddies for a while now, so it's so nice to, like, finally sit down with you, and this will be a great chat. I'm excited. So can you introduce yourself to the audience? Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay, awesome. So I'm Lucy. I'm 25, and I live in Lincolnshire in the United Kingdom, and I became disabled when I was 21. I had a really rare brain disease named encephalitis when I was 20, and it was misdiagnosed as a mental illness. So they sectioned me in a psychiatric ward for 3 months, and I had a brain disease which was going completely untreated. They were treating me for this mental breakdown, which didn't exist. So obviously the brain disease was able to progress and progress for these 3 months. By the end, I was like a shell of a person, really. I was sort of in a vegetative state and catatonic. And they said to my mom and dad, look, she's going to die. We don't know why. But as a last-ditch attempt, we can give her ECT, like her electroshock therapy kind of thing, which isn't really used much these days. But so on my 21st birthday, I had 3 rounds of that. And a miracle, it sort of triggered these seizures, which reset my brain. Unfortunately, and I always say it would be great if the story ended there, like a miracle cure, but unfortunately they put me back on my psychiatric ward bed, and I had such a big seizure that I fell out of the bed. No one was watching me, and there were no sides upon the bed, and I fell, this is a long story, onto a open radiator pipe. It was the end of November, so the pipe was as hot as it would ever be, and it burnt all the way through my sciatic nerve because I couldn't feel it because I was catatonic, and that ultimately permanently paralyzed my lower leg.
Wow, that's quite a story. And okay,
and then so obviously I became disabled then, but also because of the brain disease, I couldn't actually talk, I couldn't walk, I didn't recognize like anyone, my family or anything. So I was 21 then, I'm 25 now. For 2 years, I sort of had to relearn how to talk, how to walk, absolutely everything. But the positive is then when I was 23, I went back to university, finished my degree. And now today I am an absolute supermodel.
Amazing.
And legend, really. So
I love how you just called yourself a legend. That's amazing.
Someone has to.
I mean, but this, all that happened to you in such a short span of time, like that was literally only 4 years ago. So we're talking like 2016, 2017.
That's what it was.
Wow, that feels like that's a lot to go through. In that's like how your whole life changed. Your whole life was upended. Like, wow.
100%. I'd never had any illness, really, no mental illness. So, and it everything happened in the space of a week. Like one day I was completely fine, then over the week my behavior started changing, and then bang, like done.
Wow. And encephalitis, just so that people know, that's like the swelling of the brain, right?
Yeah, so the type that you can have viral encephalitis or autoimmune encephalitis. I had autoimmune encephalitis, which can literally happen to anyone at any time. It's most common in young women, and often like a tumor is the cause, but I didn't have a tumor. It was just autoimmune. But yeah, inflammation of the brain. They call it friendly fire, where your brain mistakenly attacks itself.
Fun. That sounds so joyous for you. I'm sure you'd love that so much. So,
it's a good story.
Like one day you were fine and hanging out, and then you said your behavior changed. Like, how did it? Did you notice changes, or did people notice that you were?
So the whole that whole 3 month period, I have nearly no memory of. I just have these really awful flashbacks, and then things I do remember, I'm like, did that actually happen, or was it a hallucination? Because part of the illness is you hallucinate a lot. So I have sort of a very strange reality of what happened. But I was at university at the time, living with my friends, and they noticed I suddenly became really, really depressed, and was just crying all the time about things that I'd never been bothered about before, and sort of really confused. And one morning, well, the morning that it all really kicked off, my friend found me at 6 o'clock in the morning, screaming her name, like tucked up in a ball, rocking backwards and forwards, and I'd just absolutely torn my bedroom to pieces. And that's when everyone realized there's something very wrong.
Yeah, something really wrong here. That's got to be... I mean, usually when we hear stories about becoming disabled, usually it's people going from being able to walk to being a wheelchair user. But we never usually hear the story of somebody going from having totally, completely fine mental health to being sectioned in like a matter of days. That's got to be so scary.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's interesting as well, because Had I just had encephalitis, and come out the end of it, I would have an invisible disability, because I would have an acquired brain injury. But as well as that, because of the accident in hospital, I also obviously have a visible disability as well. So it's sort of just everything at once. So such a massive life-changing experience.
Of course. And did you... Please tell me you like sued the hospital, or like you try to get damages or money or something. Please tell me something. Please.
They apologize. That's probably as much
with
as
money?
I can say.
They apologize with money?
They apologize. I think that's as much as I can say.
Oh no. All right. But also like that just shows you the level of people don't care about people in hospital. Like it's there needs to be so much more done, because like you're lucky that you got out of that with what you did. You could have been, it's been so much worse. You could have died. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
like,
and I think obviously when I became more, when I sort of had learned how to, I had to learn to like write and read and everything again. But obviously when I sort of was able to read up on it, and I sort of looked into the history of encephalitis and everything, and I realized like the massive gendered implications as well. They saw a young girl at university and they immediately said mental health, or they, well, at first they tried to say she's taken drugs, which I've never, or she's been spiked, you know. They, and I know in medicine they're told, in the UK, I don't know if that's, if you hear hoofbeats, assume yeah. it's a horse, not a zebra kind of thing. Yeah. And that's all well and good until it's a zebra.
Yeah. And it's usually, you know, the, we hear that a lot in medical discourse in the States and in Canada too. But like, usually it's a fucking zebra. So look for that too. Like, usually when stuff like this goes down, it's a zebra. So,
it's a unicorn.
Yeah. but I mean, there, I just can't imagine. I'm privileged in that I've never had an issue with my, with like seizures or brain mm-hmm. swelling that I can, like, obviously a little bit when I was a baby, but as an adult, never have had those issues. So I can't imagine going from the normalcy that I have right now to that whole experience. And did you mm-hmm. feel any, like, this is totally going off book from what I wrote down, but I have so many questions that just popped in my head. Do you have, did you have like grief about that as you were relearning stuff?
So it's so interesting because meeting me now, and I'm sure anyone thinks this, oh my gosh, she's so like vibrant, so bubbly and everything. But the 2 years, even 3 years, I would say, after I came out, like the weight of the trauma, and like the anger really that they'd let that happen to me, the misdiagnosis, the accident. And then also like now I'm sort of much more deep in with the disabled community and I've learned so much. I can see now that I had so much internalized ableism when I first became disabled, because I really thought, and I've so regret, I've really thought, well, that's it, my life's over. But I was so like naive to disability and ignorant in many ways that I can remember even thinking like, well, who's gonna fancy me now? Like, it wasn't that I thought I was unattractive because I was disabled, but it was more that I thought, well, who's gonna want to go on a date with me because I can't do this, I can't do that. But then I would say through meeting, I have so many amazing disabled friends now with like so many different conditions. I'm signed to a model agency that only books disabled model actors and talent.
Oh, fantastic.
And I would never look at any of my peers and think, well, they don't deserve love, they're not worthy. So why was I putting that on myself?
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of the interesting thing about becoming disabled, that you have this whole switch of perspective on yourself, I guess.
And I think also, like, I think, you know, I was just looking at that part of your question today, and I was thinking, like, I was born disabled, but part of my disability progresses over time. And so I've become more disabled as I've gotten older, and disability has changed and ebbed and flowed. And so you do go through a period of like grief, but I don't look at my other disabled peers as like not deserving of stuff. But I will agree with you, as I've become more disabled and disability has changed for me and ebbed for me, there are moments where I'm like, oh, well, you know, at least I'm not like this person. And then I have to stop myself and go like, no, that's ableism, try again. Like, that's mm-hmm. not, you can't do that. So I totally get it.
I think I remember, in fact, no, you see it on Twitter quite a lot where people do get really cross at people for saying that sort of thing. And I, now I'm in the place I am now with my disability and much more accepting. I do completely understand, but when you're going through it, it's a completely different, you know, you are grieving a sort of, the person you used to be, and it does take a lot of coming to terms with.
You're grieving like three or four versions of yourself actually in that moment. You're grieving who you used to be, you're grieving who you could have been if this mm-hmm. hadn't happened to you, and you're mad at who you are. So you're actually going through three layers of grief all at once. And no one, like, because we don't think ableism is real and we don't talk about it enough, like I talk about it all the time, but the average public person doesn't know what it is. So because it's not in the mainstream, people just think, oh, you're just upset, you'll get over it. It's like, no, I'm going through like definite trauma about what's happening to me right now.
Yeah, I what you just said about people not even thinking ableism's a real thing. I can think recently I did a big campaign with around 13 girls, all different ages, women, girls, and was speaking to them about ableism, and they had never heard the word before. Like,
yeah. And so when you did that with them, what did you say when they were like, oh, we don't know what it is? Like, how did you?
I always try to like educate, because as I say, before it happened to me, I can say I was ignorant and naive to lots of things about disability and massively about ableism. I think, do you know something that you hear a lot is it's often when able-bodied people are talking about ableism, they say, well, disabled people are the largest minority that we could become a part of at any moment. And where that's true, also, you shouldn't want to do better for disabled people because you could become disabled tomorrow. You should want to do better for disabled people because they deserve better.
Yeah, yeah, and I totally agree with that. And by doing better for them now, you'll be doing better for yourself tomorrow. And it's all like it all like part of with what my sister and I are doing on the Handycast and with Handy is, and we always say like she has kind of adopted the term temporarily able-bodied now as part of her like the way she talks for herself. And I love that because she's learning about disability from a place where she's never, it's not part of her, like her body, her makeup, but she's learning. And so much like you do with education, I'm learning to like, to soften my approach a little bit and be like, all right, let's hold your hand through this a little bit and walk you through to teach you about disability in a way that isn't shamey. I mean, it's fun to put people on blast, but it's also exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if the Sia movie recently. The week that was really taken off on Twitter, I had a fair few debates about it, and it absolutely drained the life out of me. At the end of the day, I literally sat in my bed and cried because I just couldn't believe that people felt completely opposite to how I felt about it, and it was absolutely exhausting. So I definitely understand what you mean there.
I mean, it's what I've learned through doing my activism and what I do is like, I would much rather use my platform to give somebody a leg up and to give somebody the knowledge to like change their viewpoint through a wink and a nod versus like, you're an ableist, fuck you. Like, yeah, I can do that, and sure, I can do that, and we can all do that. And that's fun sometimes, believe me, it's really fun. But also it's like, not productive, because then you just yell at somebody that you could be teaching to. So I really like, and I love your activism, like you on social media. It's fun, it's playful, it's bright, it's bubbly, and there's disability there. Like, I think that's so powerful. Like I just think seeing more representation of disability in the modeling world is, I mean, we see it in like New York Fashion Week, and we see it in like Paris Fashion Week, and they'll have like these one-off shows where, out of the graciousness of their heart, they'll have like a disabled person go down the runway. And that's very nice, but like, where is this all the time?
I think I can think of a company in the UK, a fashion company who did this. They did this campaign where they selected people, a really wide variety of diverse people. And then the next week it was back to using, Love Island people, yeah. And it's like, okay, cool, but that was just a moment in time. Why are we back to business as usual? Because that's done absolutely nothing. That's, you know, thank you.
yeah. And I mean, I think like, so how do you want to use your platform to change these conversations?
So I try to get involved with as much charity as possible. So November this year, there was Purple Tuesday. I think it's just in the UK. Yeah,
it's Purple like Giving Tuesday, right?
Well, speaking and pushing the message as much as I can. So Purple Tuesday celebrates, I think it's £274 billion a year people, disabled people and their families in the UK put into the economy. And it sort of poses the question to brands and businesses, if we're putting all this into the economy, what are you giving back? And so this year, the aim was that every brand, every business, every company would do one thing to improve accessibility for disabled people, whether it be online, so adding alt text.
Image descriptions, yeah.
Or in stores, making aisles wider and things like that. Or in campaigns, including a disabled person. And so I called out brands. We were all calling out brands. And did hardly anyone. And, you know, why? I would like to know why you will not do one thing for an entire community who are putting so much money, you know, we're spending. And, you know, it makes me want to withdraw support from anyone. Another thing I always say is go on your favorite brand's Instagram, go on your and scroll for 30 seconds. Do you see a disabled person on their feed? No. And why is that? That's their choice now. And that's their choice to not support us. So why are we supporting them?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so, you know, I did a paper on the as I'm dying here, I did a paper on the disabled buying power in the UK last year. And to see, yeah, billions of pounds disabled people are spending just in the day to day. So why wouldn't you give them something? You're right. Why wouldn't you give them something back? And why wouldn't you provide access? And because it's going to go back in your pockets later, and they're going to,
yeah.
Not only are you doing what's right, you're going to have money at the end. So like, it just doesn't make sense. So brands, yeah. Listen to Lucy and listen to me when we tell you, use us and do better for us. Thanks.
And also, as I said, I'm signed to a model agency, Zebedee, who just represent disabled people. And recently, one of our models called Ellie Goldstein, she got the Gucci Beauty cover, and Gucci posted the photo on Instagram, and it's their most liked photo they've ever posted. So clearly, people want to see it. Like, we're not just shouting for no reason. Like, people want to see more representation.
Yeah, they really do, because I think they know, and we're learning, we're seeing a shift in more people are becoming disabled through illness, through proper diagnosis, through
also just, through COVID-19, so many more people will become disabled.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it's time for these companies to really take it seriously. I mean, it was time 20 years ago,
and
it was
time. It's been time, yeah.
Yeah, like it's always been there, but I think now, you know, COVID-19 is forcing us to look at this stuff with a much more critical eye. Like, we can't just let it go, because we're all gonna be, you know, knock on wood, we're all gonna be affected by this in one way or another, whether we get it ourselves or whether a family member gets it. Which means that disability and illness will become a part of our story. So these brands have to recognize that. I want to move on to, oh, we're only on question two. Awesome. So you kind of touched on this already a little bit, but I want to touch on it some more. How did becoming disabled with encephalitis change your views on sexuality in your body?
So like I said at the start, I was so depressed for a long time. I'd given up on myself. And as I had to learn to walk and everything again. So exercising really wasn't something that I was able to do. And as well as that, I was on a lot of medication, and it made me put on a lot of weight. And that made me sort of, I just hated myself so much. But again, now I'm here and look back, again, that's just another thing that society told me I should hate about myself, that I'd put on. I mean, I've lost weight now, skinny legend. But you know, when you're in the moment, like the weight of everything on top of you, you can so easily get in such a hole, and it is so hard to pull yourself out of. But you know, really, even when I was at my biggest, and you know, when I had my NHS crutches, when I, you know, people still fancied me. So like, why was I being so harsh on myself?
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's so many stories of disabled people that I've talked to and heard on Twitter and been in contact with, who've been like, yeah, I'm on meds for this, and it means I'm gonna gain weight, but it doesn't mean I'm still not awesome. And like,
I think
you know, we have to talk more about the connection between medications and weight gain or mm-hmm. weight loss, because it happens so much. But and people think it's a moral failing if you put on a pound or two, and it's like, well, no, that's not it at all. You have no idea what their backstory is. You have no idea. No, like,
I think
why.
Again, going back to Corona again, like a lot of people through lockdown who've never been bigger in their life are putting on weight because they're at home a lot of the time now.
Yeah,
and they're eating because, and people are, again, they're they don't know what to do with this new, like, and I think
all these new restrictions are like, let's have food. Yeah, like, me too. Me too. Like, I can now devour a sleeve of chips in like an hour or two, because I'm like,
why not?
Like, what else am I doing? I'll just keep eating. It's like, I totally get it. But
there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with, you know, in a global pandemic, putting on a bit of weight. It really isn't the end of the world.
And even before the pandemic, like, if you're disabled and you weigh something, that's fine. Like, I've always said, and I talked to somebody like a year, 2 or 3 years ago when we did the show, I talked to somebody who said to me, we were talking about their weight gain and their like the way they ate food because of their disability. And they said, you know, having weight on my body because of my disability makes me feel safe. If I lose weight, I feel like I'm going to not be safe. So I always, every time I gain a pound, I'm like, well, actually that means I'm safe. Like, my body's good. It has enough. It has more than enough now to be okay. And so it made me look at weight super differently, because it wasn't like this weight is bad. It's actually like, oh, this weight's protecting you from, you know, more other things.
Yeah. And I sort of hit at sort of a turning point, I'd say last year, when I sort of sat down to myself and thought, Lucy, think of everything that your body has been through, and every cell in your body fought so hard to keep you alive. Why are you being so evil to it? Why are you being so nasty to yourself when this body saved you? And I think like that like spun my head, and I was like, why are you wasting time hating yourself?
I mean, it's a hard place to get to when you, and I can imagine for you becoming disabled so quickly, really, I can imagine did you ever feel like your body betrayed you, or you're like, fuck this body, like, why did you do this?
I'm not sure. I definitely had times where I thought like, oh, it's not fair and all this, but you know, life's not fair and you get dealt what you get dealt. And you know, I'm really fortunate. I'm lucky but unlucky. Like, I'll never say that I'm thankful for what happened to me, but good gosh, has it taught me a lot about how resilient I am. And you know, it's opened my eyes to so many things. So you know, I can find the thanks in the things that I've been through.
Now, I know that I can see it as I'm looking at you here. I noticed that you use a cane, which I love, and on your social media and all your Instagram and stuff, you use a cane, and it's so playful and bright, and it's purple, and I love, it's my favorite thing on your social media, really. Every time I see it, I'm like, yes, there it is, amazing. So I know friends with canes and other mobility devices, and they give I have a friend with a cane, and she names her canes different names. She has four of them. I can't remember what their names are, but she told me what they were. First of all, where did you get your cane? Because it's a different kind of cane. It's not like the one you would get at the like medical shop. It's really like bright and cool. So where'd you get it?
And so I think I have maybe 11 different ones. I have pretty much every color you could imagine. I have one that lights up. I have like transparent one, bright pink one. Like, I have everything, because so fortunately I found this brand on Instagram called Neo Walk Sticks, and everyone always asks me, so I'll spell it out. It's NEO Walk Sticks, and they customize it to your height. You can have whatever handle you want. Like, they do different colors on the bottom, and like I said, you can get them to light up and everything. And the way that my entire confidence changed when I got my first stick, because before I was just using NHS crutches. The first stick I ever got was this bubblegum pink, and like, that's so me, like pink and to like step out with it and like match my outfit and everything, like I felt like amazing. And again, I would say that was actually a turning point. And you know, everyone, when I'm walking down the street now, they stop me and they say, whereas before they'd be like, oh, what's happening to you? Like, now they're like, oh my gosh, what a jazzy walking stick. And I'm like, I know.
Yeah, that's great though. So do you have a name for it, for all of them, or do you
I just call them my stick. I really should probably name them now you said that.
I mean, we should totally go through one day and like give them you should put them on Instagram and be like, what do you think I should name my cane?
Well, do you know what? People always ask me to do, because I do TikTok now. I think I have 176,000 followers on TikTok now. But they always ask me to do like a show all my canes and everything on there. So maybe I should ask TikTok. That's name my canes.
Yes. They, I mean, they're like an Instagram Live or something, but TikTok is like the new, I'm too old. So TikTok is like, well, how do you, I don't know how to do it.
Well, it's interesting actually, because TikTok, so in end of November, I had a TikTok account that had about 30,000 followers, and I had a video briefly going over my disability, what had happened. I was wearing a dressing gown, I was fully clothed, and overnight, I hadn't posted anything for 2 days. Overnight, this video started picking up hundreds and thousands of views. The next day, I click on the app and they deleted my entire account. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know, you only have to do a little Google search into TikTok and disability and you see like similar things, or on Twitter. Yeah. But anyway, like I said, I made a new account and now we're on 170 something thousand followers. So you're welcome, Ableist.
Tell me a little bit about your, some dating stories of with your disability. Like, tell me kind of what that's like. And do you have any good stories? Do you have any horror stories? Anything you want to share about that?
I thought about this. So I've been single for since before I was poorly. So I'm on all of the dating apps, and the huge amount of first messages that I get will be, what's up with your leg, or like, what's happened to your leg? And I've had some really like foul messages as well about my leg, not like sexual messages, just like rude. Yeah. Like, why have you got a walking stick on the beach and things like that? It's like, was I supposed to leave it? Like, was I supposed to leave it off the beach? And just, I don't know. I don't really date that much because I hate men. But a recent date, well, pre-corona, I went on, I'd actually been on a date with the same person a year before and it hadn't worked out, but he'd messaged me like, oh, can I have a second chance, whatever. And I was lonely, so I gave him a second chance. And when we had gone on a date before, I was on a lot of medication, and I wasn't allowed to try and get pregnant. I wasn't allowed to have a baby because the medication would have meant that there were severe complications with the pregnancy. And we must have spoken about this anyway. So I went on a date with him earlier this year, and it was going great. And so I said, oh, just out of interest, what made you get back in touch with me? And he already had a child. And he said, oh, I just remembered that you can't have children and I don't want any more children. So I thought I would, and I thought,
what?
And the joke is, I'm not even on that medication anymore, so I can have 54 children if I want more.
Oh, no. What a...
Yeah, how rude.
What a fucking tosser he is.
I know.
No, that's horrible. And super ableist and super misogynist. There's so many layers to how gross that is. Ew.
And people wonder why we stay single over here.
Like, this is just, like, and I will say, like, I don't date much anymore. I work predominantly with sex workers to have my needs met, obviously, pre-corona, not so much right now, but before corona, like, I see mostly sex workers. Everyone knows this because I talk about it all the time. But it's, you know, it's so much easier because you get what you need in a friendly, safe environment with somebody who gives a shit about you, and then you see them in 2 weeks and there's no drama. There's no like feelings. There's no like, you know, I mean, there are feelings of like friendliness and joy, but there's not like, you know, there's no crap. You get exactly what you need and they get what they need and then we're done. So I totally agree with you with that. I would love to meet somebody and be swept head over heels. And like, you know, I want to have that big, I do, part of me does want to have that big love story moment, but I also don't give a fuck. I'm like, I want to suck a nice dick, have a great time, and see you later. Bye. Like, that's it. That's it.
People always ask, because I've actually been single since I was 19, so 6 years. And people always say, like, why kind of thing. And, you know, if you haven't met someone who, you know, matches you and you could actually see in your life in a positive way, then what's the point? I don't need to give energy to something that isn't for me, you know. What's meant to be for me will come to me, and if it's not, it's not, kind of thing.
Yeah, like, it's not. And I think, you know, the more and more I remind myself that if somebody comes along and wants to be with me, then maybe I'll explore that. But if they don't, I'm still good. And I still get the things I need, and I can still be disabled and hot, and I can still, you know. So, like, I just think, and again, thank God for sex work. Like, thank goodness for sex work.
I know, and what you just said, I think that's a massive lesson to people who look down their nose at sex workers and such, because, you know, it's an essential job.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, I've worked with disabled sex workers. I work with non-disabled sex workers. Like, I have done sex work. So, like, I support all of that. I think right now, one of the things I love about being in Corona, not that I love it, but the fact that we're all in it and forced to do it anyway, is that, yeah, I can't touch you physically, but I can commission a video from you. I can commission, uh-huh, like, a sexy chat. And at least that way I'm able to still have some, you know, some affection and some, like,
uh-huh, 100%. Yeah,
if it wasn't lockdown, this person would fuck me. Great. Awesome.
We love the ego boost.
Right. I mean, it's for me, it's really nice to have the hot, like, shirtless dude be like, yeah, I'll send you a video. It's like, okay, good. Just pulling up my questions. So what are, my radio keeps randomly turning on. Hang on one second. Hey Siri, stop. Keeps randomly turning on the radio right then. Awesome. My question was, what are some of the ways that people have fetishized you as a disabled person? And if you could talk to those people that have done that to you, what would you say to them right now?
So I have a OnlyFans account, and recently I've had a messages from the same person. It started off asking something like, are there any positions that you can't do or something, which, you know, lots of people ask all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't really talk about all that stuff. But then they started asking for videos of me walking and things, and I sort of realized, oh, I see.
Oh, you're a devotee.
And told me that I could really make it as a disabled porn star or whatever. You know, if anyone wants to do that, that's entirely up to them. That's not what I would like to be at the minute.
Yeah.
So I don't like it when it's forced on you, put on you by someone else, yeah, like you haven't consented to it. The same. There was a big page on Instagram last year, and I'll get the name wrong, so I won't try, but it had disabled in the title, and it was reposting photos of disabled women, and it was sort of disguising itself as a positive account. But then I spoke to several girls, because I'd started getting really like creepy messages from the person running it, and we sort of all exchanged, and it was like the person running it wasn't disabled, they were like a fetishist. There's another word that is devotees, and there's another word beginning with A for people who I can't think
of it either, but I'll look it up. But I mean, it's funny because I think there are degrees of fetishization, and I think there are, like, I will fetishize myself,
uh-huh,
but because I'm disabled and I'm the one doing it, I feel like that's okay. But if someone else does it to me without my consent, that feels immediately weird,
yeah,
and immediately uncomfortable.
Yeah, definitely. And again, like, occasionally I'll have like a message in my DMs. I think it's quite common amongst amputees to be fetishized. And again, like, if they haven't asked or consented for it, I just don't think that anyone should be putting that.
No, I think it's such a violation of who you are.
It is. It's a violation, definitely.
And it's just like I understand curiosity, and I understand wanting to learn more, and that's total education is totally different than abuse.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is a lot of fetishization, whatever, I can't say that word, fetishization, there we go. What happens with that a lot of the time is that they'll say, you'll tell them, oh, that hurt me, please don't talk like that. And they'll say, oh, I just want to learn more.
Mm.
And it's like, well, no, you don't. You want to use education as the reason for you to be a fucking twat. And I'm not, yeah, okay with that. Like, that's not okay. So, mm-hmm, like, when somebody does that to you, how do you How do you respond?
Most people, I just don't respond at all. I'm very much like that. I don't really feel the need to respond. I mean, if people leave me nasty comments and such, especially on TikTok, I'll give them a response because it's good content for me. But when it comes to disability, I'd rather just not even give it the airtime, to be honest.
No, I don't blame you. Tell me more about, no, because you mentioned it a couple times throughout this interview. Tell me a little bit more about the disabled modeling agency that you model for.
Okay, so they're actually in the US, just moving to Australia as well, opening a branch there. Started in the UK, it's now and in Europe, the biggest supplier of disabled models in the entire world. I think we have over 500 models now. It includes disabled models, people with alternative appearance, so visible difference, and also trans and non-binary models. So it was founded in 2017. As I say, now it's the world's biggest supplier, and you know, they do absolutely, I've been with them for a year and a half, and they do absolutely amazing work for changing the face of fashion and giving representation to people that the media often ignore. Yeah, they've just in January opened an influencer division as well to sort of get more noise on social media as well. So it's very cool. But like I said, Ellie Goldstein, she has Down syndrome. She Gucci beauty model, Most Liked Photo. You know, she's doing amazing things. And there's so many brands and campaigns that they get us in the door of, and it's so amazing. But you know, there's still such a long way to go. And you know, when I open Instagram and if I see Gucci, or Ellie's done like lots of very big brands now, when I open it and she's the first picture, instead of thinking, oh my god, someone with Down syndrome, I want to go, oh my god, that's Ellie, she looks amazing, because I want it to be so normalized that it's just not even, you know, do you understand what I mean?
Yeah completely. You don't want it to be, wow, we're gonna tokenize this person with Down syndrome.
Because when I've worked I've definitely been the token before, and sometimes brands will use you as the token and they will want the accolades of
the glass.
Well, so like the inspiration porn, the able getting the warm fuzzies because they see a walking stick. But you know, behind the scenes, there was no thought towards accessibility or anything like that.
And I think that's the hardest part. Like, I think the outward culture of we're doing good and look at us representing disabled people, that's one tiny part of the experience. If you're there behind the scenes hating it and not having access, well, then they haven't done their job. And like, one of the things I love with Handy and the work I do with them as the chief disability officer, like, you know, I'm front and center. So anything that doesn't feel right, I can say to the team, like, hey, we should make sure, you know, we should do our best to make sure that this is accessible. Like, we did a whole photo shoot in Australia a few months ago last year with a bunch of disabled models. And they made sure that access was figured out. Like, I wasn't there, and obviously I was here in Canada, but like, you know, our teams made sure that everything was set up, and people said, we asked them like, how was the experience? And they all said, oh my God, it was amazing, because you took care of us. And so like, I really wish more brands would recognize that it's not just about the end product. It's about the whole process from booking the model to getting them there, to figuring out what their access needs are, to making sure that when they're there, all of their access needs are met, so that they can give you 110% and then feel like they were cared for all the way through.
Yeah, I think a big part of the problem of that as well is that there aren't enough disabled people high up in companies to bring these things to people's attention, because, you know, able-bodied people often don't even think about things like that because it doesn't affect them. You know, it's the same as things in life. If it doesn't affect you, you don't really consider it. But I can think around the start of lockdown, or I booked this job with a very big brand in the UK, and I went down to London for it, and I was so excited. and I got there and straight away there was this gigantic staircase. And I mean, there's so many other things happened throughout the day, but just the start of the day there, just looking down at it in that moment, you know, the internalized ableism came out again, because I thought to myself, like, what am I going to do now? Because I can either struggle down this staircase or I can turn around, go home. You know, I'm grateful. I'm now grateful for this opportunity that I have, because it's a big brand. And, oh, the bigger picture, like, disabled people are going to see me in this campaign and they're going to think that could be me, kind of thing. So I bit my lip, and I shouldn't have bit my lip. It's again one of those things where if any of my friends were telling me the story, I know my rights. I know their rights.
You would have said, like, what are you doing? You know, make sure you're okay. Don't do this. This is silly. Mm-hmm, but because, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree. When you're in it, sometimes you do get this, we as disabled kind of influencers, which is a whole, I hate that term, but like disabled, we as disabled people that are public facing, kind of think, if I do this, that 15-year-old kid that needs to see me, mm-hmm. is going to see me. But then at the same time, like, we put ourselves in situations that are not accessible at all, that are not, mm-hmm. always the safest for us. And that's the hard part. It's like, why?
I think sometimes the hardest person to advocate for is yourself.
Yeah. Especially, mm-hmm. when you have, like, disabilities. And when you, like with what you and I have done respectively in our kind of, in our niches of, like, putting ourselves out there as a public figure, when you start to think about, if I say no to this, then other brands won't reach out to me and other, mm-hmm. people won't want to work with me. And if I just shut up and do it, it'll be fine. When what we should be saying is, no, I should be going to the lead person and being like, hey, here's why this won't work for me. Either I'm going to go home now, contact me in like 2 weeks and we'll figure out another day to do it where accessibility is actually thought about, or I'm not doing this. Like, that's what we all want to do in our heads, but the minute you're there, you're like, well, I'm out of here. I'll just, all right, whatever.
And especially when you're the only, so this thing, it was a huge crew of people, you know, men, women, everyone, and not one of them was disabled. I was the only disabled person in the building. And then you feel sort of isolated with it, because again, it's the internalized, you assume that they're all going to think that's an angry disabled person, like, that's, you know, and
yeah.
God, I wish I hadn't. It's hindsight, isn't it? I don't think I would act that way if I was in the situation again, but you just don't know, because you can feel sort of like the little person,
yeah,
like beneath.
You mentioned your internalized ableism a little bit throughout this interview, and I'd love to hear from you, because all of our internalized, the way disabled people internalize ableism is different for every single disabled person. So I'd love to hear from you, if you feel comfy, like, what does your internalized ableism feel like and look like for you?
I think it depends on the situation. Like I said, I've come like absolutely leaps and bounds in the way that I view my disability. I do not view my disability as like a shame, or I tried to not really let it hinder me from doing anything, but I'm also aware of my limits and things I can and can't do. So I really hope and think that I've, like, that's like in the past. But then, as I say, when this was this year that I was in this situation, and I think other people bring it out of me. Again, I had a job in a real retail department, and obviously I'm paralyzed in my left leg, and I was on a shift, 8 hours standing up shift, and I said, please can I have a chair? Please can I have a chair? I'm paralyzed. No, it'll make the shop floor look cluttered. And then the boss brought me in the office at the end of my shift and said, we really need to speak about those crutches, they're making the shop floor look untidy, can you get rid of them?
No. Oh, that's horrible.
No. No.
I would have hit him with the crutch and been like, the answer is no.
It was a woman. And anyway, I sat there and took it. I mean, this was last year, so I wasn't as confident in myself, but I sat there and took it, and I was so angry with myself. When I walked out of the office, I started crying because I was so angry, and I resigned that morning because I was just like, I'm not having that.
Yeah,
absolutely
no.
Not. Million years not having that. And you know, thankfully everything's worked out for me, because I the job I do now I absolutely love, and I'm doing amazing.
No, I just, like, that's so That's so ableist what they've said to you. Like, of course you can't. Why would you care more about your shop floor than you do about the person in the shop?
I just think that's like.
Yeah, your jaw hits the floor because you're like, what?
Like, if someone was in a wheelchair, would they have said to them,
"Can you get rid of it?"
Wheelchair, like.
I've had that before once. I wanted to go to a big. And I think I told the story somewhere, but I wanted to go to a big gay event a couple years ago. This big gay event in Toronto, like before Corona, where everyone's partying, and I wanted to go because I don't go to big gay events. And I was like, well, I want to meet, you know, a hot gay dude and whatever. So I want to go to this party, and I called up the venue before the party started. And I said, oh my God, I'm so excited. Like, it'll be so fun. I want to be there to represent disabled bodies. I'd love to come. And like, I'll pay, but I want to come. And they said, okay, well, and I said, okay, well, I'm in a wheelchair, like I'm in a power chair. What's the access like? And they went, oh, yeah, your power chair won't fit. Could you just get another one? And I paused, and it was like the super happy gay dude on the phone, like trying to be really polite. And I said, do you realize what you just said to me? And he goes, no, can you just get another chair? And I said, that's like me asking you to get other legs. And he was like, oh, I didn't mean it. And I was like, I know you didn't mean it, but you still said it. And now I'm not coming to your party and I got to go. And I hung up the phone and I just was so angry. But like, yeah. It happened and I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. And I think you know, every single disabled person, no matter if you have the same condition as another person or not, like the experience with it, the lived experience, and everyone's just completely different. Everyone has all these stories, these different stories, and when you hear them, it's just unbelievable the amount of shit that people
put up with. And the amount of my problem is the willful ignorance. Like, mm-hmm. You wouldn't say that to someone else. What made you think that it was okay that you said to me? And no. Sure, like, I've said crappy stuff too, but someone's called me out and been like, hey, don't do that. Like, here's why that sucks. But when you do it to certain populations, like when I call out some of my queer peers, when I call them out, they'll be like, oh, I just didn't know. And it's like, well, you didn't know that might hurt me. Like, what? Okay. So it can be really hard to be in the space we're in as influencers, which is, again, a word I hate. But like, as public-facing figures in the disability community, it's so hard because my kind of thing is like, I want to guide everybody through, and I want to teach.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news? Brought to you live.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are just listening to an episode of Disability After Dark. If you would like to listen to the remainder of this episode, you can go to andrewgurza.com. Spelled out, that's andrewgurza.com. And that completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special edition of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6. To stay up to date with Avalanche news, check out our Twitter at AvalancheCKUT. Thank you, Zerdu, to all those who make educational, inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. If you'd like more information on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact The Avalanche at avalancheckut.ca or CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or news at ckut.ca. Dating for Jose, that's up next. We'll be right back.
exacte de votre région ou d'une région à proximité est rouge. Afin de limiter la propagation de la COVID-19, les rassemblements d'amis ou de famille dans les résidences et cours privées sont interdits et les déplacements vers d'autres régions sont à éviter. De plus, il est défendu de quitter son domicile entre 21h30 et 5h le matin. Visitez québec.ca/coronavirus pour connaître les mesures en place pour lutter contre la COVID-19. Respectez toutes les règles, tout le temps, sans exception. Un message du gouvernement du Québec. CKUT 90.3 FM.
It's time for Audio Smut. Oh god, I'm so fucking wet. Yeah. Yeah. Like that. Like that. Oh god.
You can't hear me.
You're listening to Audio Smut. My name is Mycelium, and this is Mycophilia. This is the third expression of my messy mycophilic research process. I'm gathering you here today for some good old-fashioned propaganda. Ecosexual propaganda. My goal is simple.